Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, Speak with Confidence and Unleash Your Power. Our guest today is Lisa Nichols, founder and CEO of Motivating the Masses, one of the country's only publicly traded personal and business development training companies. From her years as a struggling single mom on public assistance to becoming a millionaire entrepreneur, Lisa's determination has helped audiences break through to discover their own untapped talents and potential. Becoming an effective public speaker can make a huge difference in your life, in your career, and in your community. In today's teleclass, Lisa will teach you a few tactics that you can use right now to prepare for the stage, the boardroom, or the negotiating table, tailor your message to the audience, strengthen your presence, share your enthusiasm, and create the impact you desire. And now, let's welcome Lisa Nichols.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be with you. I'm so excited to teach you content today. You know, mastering your message is a powerful opportunity for anyone. You know, as a speaker for the last 21 years, I've noticed how speaking and having the gift of oration isn't just something that's designed for the main stage. It's also for a boardroom. It's also for an office. It's also for a one-on-one conversation. It's also good, used very well in a conversation with your children. So anywhere you are, no matter what you're doing in the world, mastering your message is key and critical. When you think about how to master your message, one of the first things to do is to go, what does it mean to really understand what an abundant conversation looks like? So let's start with defining what abundance is. Abundance, and I'll actually lean toward taking the myths of abundance away. So one of the myths is that abundance is for those people over there, the privileged, the few, those in that zip code, those of that hue. And the reality is abundance is for everyone. The second myth is that abundance is something that you have to go get, when in fact the truth is abundance is something you expand in your now. You don't go get abundant relationships. You take your current relationships to the next level by saying, I love you more often, I forgive you sooner, quicker, faster, and spending more quality time face-to-face and present with them. And then the third myth is to understand that abundance is something that most people think that abundance is something that you get over a period of time, when in fact abundance is something that's available to you right now. Abundance is not attached to money. Most people think abundance is attached to money solely. That's wealth. Wealth is attached to money. Abundance is attached to your relationships, your spirituality, your finances, and your physical health. Abundance is a 360 experience. So as you're using your voice to inspire people, and the goal is to use your voice, your message, to inspire, not impress. To inspire, not impress. Recognize that you have that the best way you can do that is to come from a place of abundant thinking. And abundant thinking is a space of operating in your overflow. You're not operating from any scarcity or any lack. You're operating from overflow. So I want to give you a few techniques, as well as blend it with a few mindsets. So a mindset that I'll give you will always be the mindset of an abundant thinker versus an average thinker, because abundant thinkers think differently than average thinkers think. Then while I'm doing that, I'll also give you some skills and techniques on how do you have a more powerful impact on others using your voice. So the first thing I want to share with you is that abundant thinkers don't focus on macro wins. Abundant thinkers focus on micro wins. Macro wins are those big, huge goals that will take you a year or two or 18 months to achieve. And while abundant thinkers have macro goals, they focus on micro wins. So what are the 10 micro wins that lead to every macro goal? Abundant thinkers live in the micro wins so that they actually achieve more macro goals. When you also look at how abundant thinkers think, abundant thinkers make their plans and their critical decisions based on knowledge, not longing, based on information, not emotion. Abundant thinkers versus average thinkers make decisions based on content, not emotion. Number three, abundant thinkers have learned that you have to take responsibility not only for your thoughts, not only for your actions, but most importantly, abundant thinkers know that you have to take responsibility for your reactions. And four, abundant thinkers are constantly setting up a state of cognitive dissonance. Now, when I first heard this, I had no idea what cognitive dissonance was and how could I do that. But cognitive dissonance is a constant feeling of discomfort when there's a discrepancy between your beliefs and your behaviors, meaning your beliefs about who you are and where you should be are not in alignment with your behaviors. Your behaviors are not supporting those beliefs about who you are. Therefore, you're setting up a constant state of discomfort in your mind, and your mind will work very hard to eliminate the discomfort by pushing your behaviors towards your beliefs. I love that. It's just so powerful. It's such a great form of neurolinguistic programming of the brain and a great tool to use. Now, it's not about not being grateful for where you are. It's simply about holding yourself accountable to the next version of yourself and putting that belief system in your mind until till your behaviors begin to become congruent with your belief system. And five, abundant thinkers are constantly using affirmations because they recognize that whatever words come after I am is true to your unconscious mind. Whatever words come after I am are true to your unconscious mind. No matter what you say, I am brilliant, I am smart, I am not good enough, I'm never going to win at this game, I'm always coming in last, I am everything I need, I am ready for the next season, it's all true to your unconscious mind. And one of my favorites, because I've intimately experienced this, is that abundant thinkers give themselves permission to fail. Because once you give yourself permission to fail, you actually are giving yourself permission to fly. Because until you give yourself permission to fail, you won't ever really take a leap. But abundant thinkers always fail forward. And abundant thinkers, eight, they avoid spending their dollar time on penny tasks. Now, I'm giving you the distinction between abundant thinkers and average thinkers. And so if you want to shift your thinking or if something particularly resonates with you, because in some areas you can be thinking abundantly, in some areas you can be thinking and very average. It's just an opportunity for you to take inventory and look at where can I raise my thinking, where can I raise my consciousness. Abundant thinkers don't spend dollar time on penny tasks. That's not to take any credit away from the task that's a penny task. It's just not the highest revenue generating activity that you should be doing. Abundant thinkers, nine, they are committed to becoming master orators. This is where I opened our conversation with master enrollers. They're committed to becoming a master at delivering content. They always speak to inspire and not to impress. And 10, abundant thinkers lead holistically. They lead even when it hurts. Abundant thinkers lead when they're alone and lonely. They lead when they're frustrated. They lead when they're being ridiculed. Abundant thinkers lead when no one wants to follow. They still lead. Abundant thinkers never abandon leadership. And so I wanted to give you 10 points around the mindset of an abundant thinker so that as you use your message, as you use your voice to touch and inspire others, it does just that. Now, when you're speaking, one of the number one things, and I'll have a chance to go into this now, but you can get a deeper dive by learning from me later because it definitely is a lot more than what I could give you in this moment. But when a great orator takes the stage or when a good speaker or when someone has a message, the first thing that the audience is doing, whether it's an audience of two or an audience of 2,000, they're looking to connect with you. So write this down. When you do what I call to be the dip theory, the dip theory gives the audience the opportunity and the doorway to connect with you and to choose you. It's not about delivering any content. It's about putting cement in between you and your audience, meaning touching them and connecting with them. So I want you to make a big V on your paper, a big V. I mean, like go down 3, 4, 5 lines and then come back up. And at the top left-hand corner of the V, I want you to write big me. And I want you to write my bio, my impressive story. Write all of that over there, the big you. Now, this is where you would hear that I was in The Secret, that I was on Oprah, I was on Larry King, that I have 7 bestsellers. That's all the big me. Now, down in the very center of the V, I want you to put all-time low, challenge, difficult moment. There, for me, would be when I was broken in 1994, when I was on government assistance. I was on WIC, Women, Infant, and Children. It's when I didn't have money to buy my son Pampers. It's when my finances were in complete chaos. I didn't know how to balance my checkbook. I didn't know how to save. My credit was bad, and my spirit was broken. That would be the low part. That would be a time where I was challenged. True story. All of it's true story. And then looking up to the right side of the V, put the lessons I've learned, my commitment because of my challenge, how I choose to serve now. So that for me would be, I've learned that my resiliency was greater than my circumstances. I learned that my human spirit was unbreakable. My human spirit is unbreakable, unshakable, unstoppable, and unavailable to my balance on my bank account. It's unavailable to my living circumstances. My human spirit is unavailable to the status of my relationship if it's not going well. My human spirit is simply waiting on a command. Lisa, who do you want to be, and what do you want us to do, and what do you want us to create? And like that, I believe yours is the same. So now what I just did for you is I did the dip theory. I told you about the all-time high, who I am today and what I'm proud of, but I took you to an all-time low and brought you back up to my level of commitment and conviction. When you do that, you deepen the audience loyalty. Why? Because it's on your way down in that dip and back up to the purpose and the reason why you're going to pick up your audience. Most speakers forget to do the dip. Most speakers avoid doing the dip. Most speakers aren't even comfortable about the dip. As a matter of fact, most speakers don't even know about the dip, but now you do. The dip is what took a 12-minute phone call from the Oprah Winfrey Show and turned it into a 2-hour phone call, and they flew producers out to my home to shoot what they call the backstory on me because they were so shocked that an expert, and I put that in quotes, an expert was willing to share their dip. You want to be unique from everyone else. You want to have a USP, a unique serving proposition that makes you stand out. Be generous to share your dip. Now, dips don't need to be long. That's not a 10-minute dip. It's not a life story dip. A dip can be a powerful 2 to 3 to 4 minute dip. And so in doing that, you connect your audience. Think of it this way. If you're building your life or you're building your business, and build it like you're building a brick building, meaning you have all these different bricks, these cubes of bricks, and you're sitting them on top of one another, right? Well, if you just sit them on top of one another, you just stack the house. It's not sturdy. The story that you will share with people about you is the cement between the bricks. As you're building your life, as you're building your business, as you're building your career. So you want to be generous with the cement. You want to have it time appropriate, environment appropriate, but you always want to be willing to share a bit of a dip. It's where we find our likeness. As long as you remember, don't go down in the dip and forget to come out. So a lot of people go down in the dip and they don't come out. That's not a dip. That's a dump. So you want to go down in your dip and you want to come back out to your purpose, your reason, your passion, your commitment, and that's why I'm here, and then go into your message. And then one last thing. You want to make sure that the audience sees themselves in you. So when you're teaching, you want to use the word I at times and then say we at times and then say you. So you don't want an entire message of you should, you should, you should, you should, because it feels like you're pointing. Even if you're not physically pointing, you're verbally pointing. And nor do you want an entire message that says I, because then it's just all about you and it's a grandized stage. And you also don't want a whole message that says we, because there's not enough distinction when you're being community and when you're being a teacher. But you want to do a dance that looks something like this. I've learned some really great lessons about how to build a business and how to create sustainable income. We all have been at a time in our lives where we needed to become the student more than we were committed to being the teacher because we wanted something different. How many of you have had the opportunity to transform your life by learning something new and you ran toward it? If you noticed and listened closely, I did I, we, you. Or you can do me, we, you, either one. And I call that the audience connection formula. So I have many of these, I won't say 100, but at least, 30 of these little techniques that over the last 21 years I have learned. For many years I just did them. And then people ask me, what did you do? How did you do it? And I had to stop 1 year and sit down for 7 weeks. And every time I came up with a different technique that I did, I'd write it out. So I just share with you two, as well as the 10 ways that abundant thinkers think differently from average thinkers. So now I'd love to open it up for any questions.
Thank you, Lisa. I guess the first question that we've got is fear of public speaking. Seems to be pretty universal. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, 75% of people have a fear of speaking in public. And I'm wondering what techniques you have for, it looks like the vast majority, three quarters of us, who find speaking in public a very frightening thing.
Well, it's gonna sound super lame and simple. But there's only one thing that helps you get over that, speak in public. We try to have techniques to get over the fear without doing it. And the reality is it's simply an underdeveloped muscle. That's it. It's like the fear of doing sit-ups. Once you do enough, you go, oh, it wasn't that bad. So we measure speaking in public as if we're standing in front of a ballroom of 500 people, all corporate execs, and we have to deliver a masterful message that sounds like Maya Angelou or some, great orator. And the reality is, speak in front of two people. Like, push yourself to speak. Whenever I have a student that is afraid, first of all, redefine what fear is. We make fear a negative thing. But you have to realize, Karen, that fear is like any other emotion. Fear is as powerful and influential as compassion, as love. Fear is synonymous and not the same emotion, but it has the same strength and impact, no more but no less, as, joy. Fear is simply another emotion. We make fear the enemy because it paralyzes us. So fear isn't the enemy. Fear isn't something to manage. It's what we do with fear. So here's what I recommend. Feel the fear and walk toward it. That's the only difference between me and people who haven't stepped into something greater than what they want, is that I felt the fear and kept walking. I wasn't without the fear. People always think, oh, you didn't feel the fear. No, hold on. I felt the fear. I just understand that fear is my friend. Fear feeds you something. Fear is telling you, study more. Fear is telling you, get up early. Fear is telling you, stay humble. Fear is telling you, get a mentor. Fear is telling you, develop the muscle. Fear is the only emotion that's really feeding you with something if we listen.
So fear, it sounds like you're saying that a certain amount of fear can actually be productive. It can take you to a higher
absolutely
level of performance.
Absolutely. Fear is fuel. Fear is literally telling you something. Just ask the question, okay, I'm afraid. What am I afraid of, and what can I do to mitigate and minimize the fear? So if you're afraid of messing up, most people, all those people you mentioned about fear of speaking, they're afraid of messing up. Okay, great. So then what does that tell me? Practice more. I mean, practice so much that I'm living, breathing, eating, walking, talking it. So messing up is reduced. So fear is feeding you.
So let's say I'm about to give a presentation to 50 coworkers, and I am just about to start. I'm a nervous wreck. What do you suggest somebody do in those moments to calm and center themselves and get ready to go out there and make an effective presentation?
Number one, realize that you're not talking to 150 people. I think that's the number you said.
I said 50, but 150, it could be any number.
Right. So you're not speaking to 150 people. You're speaking to one person and 150 seats. So make it more personalized. I always make it personalized. I always find someone's eyes who are friendly eyes, and I anchor on them. I find someone in the front two rows who are friendly eyes on the left. I find a set of friendly eyes on the right who are nodding. I find a pair of friendly eyes on the back three, four rows, to the left and the back three, four rows to the right so that I can scan the whole room in a circle and find those friendly eyes. And I give them a big smile. They give me a big smile. They feel the energy going back and forth. And I always, whenever they come up to me at the end, I go, thank you for giving me that great energy. Did you feel it? And they always go, yeah, I felt you giving it back to me. And so find that. And if you're so nervous beforehand, find them before you go up and speak. Find them before you go up and speak and just circle the room. Whenever I used to be really nervous early in my career, before I started, I would go out in the audience. The audience didn't know me then. It was very easy to walk out amongst the audience, and I'd get to know people. And I said, what's your name? These would be people I didn't even know. And I go, thank you so much. I'm so excited to see a friendly face in the audience. I'm going to look for your friendly face when I get on stage. And when I tell you, they turn up the smile for me, and they nod, and they stretch their neck out so I can see them, because I really told them. I said, thank you so much. I'm going to look for your friendly face. And not in the negative way. I'll say, because everyone else here looks so sad. I don't put any of that in the space. I say, thank you. What's your name, Diane? I'm going to look for your friendly face when I'm on stage. What's your name? Jim. Jim, I'm going to look for your smile when I'm on stage. And when I tell you, they give it to you. And so get amongst the people because you're making it a massive thing, like the people, the chairs, the number. Make it about John. Make it about Karen. Make it about Diane. Like, find the individuals in the room.
Got it. Well, that's a wonderful technique. I was wondering, Lisa, if you could talk about, you spoke about the dip theory and about the big V. And at the bottom of your V, you said you were broken. And you were a single parent living on public assistance. Could you talk about how you worked your way from the bottom of that V to where you are today?
Yeah, well, the first thing I did was I began to look at how can I shift my mindset, because my mindset was, it's what got me where I was. it's the thing that I needed to know something different. So I began to devour new knowledge like this environment that you're providing. I became a hunter for what I didn't know. Now, I wasn't interested in gathering a lot of information as much as I was interested in living out the information that I was gathering. So I didn't go try to, you know, eat up three fields of information. I took one little corner, one region, and I said, how does this look in my life? How does this look in my life? So I was willing to evict all of my old thinking, one new thought at a time. So I didn't just do away with it. I replaced it with something. Example. Let me give an example. So Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People say most people spend 80% of their time in their circle of concern and 20% of their time in their circle of influence. And when I read that, I haven't even read that since I was 25 years old, but I read that book so many times that it's embedded in me because it's in my DNA now. And so I made a list of all the things that were irritating me in my life, and then I circled all the areas that I can influence. And I began to focus on those areas more than I focused on the other areas, because he was so correct. I was really spending 80% of my time on the areas that I couldn't really impact. I was talking about them. I was frustrated about them. I was thinking about them. And I shifted and started spending 80% of my time in my circle of influence, things that I can move forward and change, and 20% of my time in my circle of concern. So I did little things like that. Like, that was very real for me. Also, you know, he had me envision myself at my own funeral, and people were to speak, and he asked the question, what are they going to say about you? What kind of friend were you? What kind of daughter were you? What kind of colleague were you? And so he talked about, I was writing my obituary, and I was so afraid at the time, because my obituary would have been nice, but it wasn't what I wanted it to say at the time that I was reading this book. And so I wrote out my obituary, which is kind of morbid and crazy, but it was actually one of the most powerful things I've ever done. I wrote out my obituary as if I had done all those things. And so here lies a woman who. So I wrote, I really wrote, here lies a woman who. And then I wrote all the things that I had done, but I hadn't done any of it yet. But I wrote my obituary as if it were done. And then I just said, okay, now I need to make my obituary come true. I just need to live inside my obituary. And so now, 20 years later, I might be even, no, oh my God, it's more like 24, 25 years later. Literally, when my platinum clients come into my office for 6 hours of personal coaching with me, the first thing we do, I say, okay, guys, I love you, and don't get freaked out, but the first thing we're going to do is you're going to die. And they're like, what? I said, we're going to write your obituary. We're going to write your legacy. And I write, here lies a man who, here lies a woman who. And the first thing we do is write their legacy. And then everything else that we do for the next 6 hours of executive coaching with them is making sure that every product they produce, every business that they launch, every relationship that they're in is in alignment with that legacy. And they're in tears and crying, like, oh, my God. Because it's powerful to go, here's who I want to be remembered as, and I'm about to design my life so that I'm not guessing or hoping.
Interesting. Were you always a talented public speaker, or did you have to learn these skills the hard way?
Well, the last time I took a speech class, I got a D-. So, and my speech teacher said, my speech teacher said, quote, unquote, Miss Nichols, I recommend that you never speak in public, that you get a desk job. So I would say it wasn't easy. I was always an orator and had the gift of gab, but I didn't know that I had a talent at it. I didn't know that I was that it would be valuable to the masses. I didn't know that. I just knew that I talked a lot. So I had to give myself permission to have the gift. I had to give myself permission to have the impact. I think most people that are listening to my voice, you know, you have a talent, you have a gift, you have multiple talents and gifts. You have skill sets that you've developed. And I think when you're unaware of who you are and you're unaware of your impact. So I guess to answer your question directly, the speaking came easy. The awareness came hard. Speaking was easy. The awareness of who I was, the awareness of my power, the awareness of the grace that I get, the awareness of the fact that I get 1,000 second chances, that I could have really screwed it up in 1993, 94, 95, 96, and 97 like I did and still be the woman I am in 2016. That was difficult.
Got it. Now, you talked about deepening the audience's sympathy when you're speaking. What are some techniques for doing that?
To humanize yourself on stage, to have a message as if I'm an authority. I've learned a lot, and I'm still on this journey with you. That the old pattern of speaking was that I've arrived and I'm on the mountaintop, and I'm inviting everyone in this room to join me on the mountaintop because the atmosphere up here is really nice. Now, in this next climate of society, I don't want you to speak to me and train me and touch me from the mountaintop. I want you to let me know that you were on the mountaintop and you walked down to get me, and we're going to walk back up together.
Got it.
So as long as your message says that and it gives that, and the way you do that and still earn your right to be on stage is you say things like, you know, for me, I say, listen, I run a multi-million-dollar business. I'm so grateful for that. And I'm still learning so many lessons on what to do right and what I've done wrong. Some of my best teaching that I'll teach you comes from the $222,000 that I spent wrong in 5 years. What I just did was I told you, listen, I have the credibility of running this successful business, but I'm going to teach you from the lessons that I learned as well.
Got it. Well, we have time for one last question, and I was hoping you could just briefly tell us about your new book, Abundance Now, which was just released.
Absolutely. So I wrote Abundance Now because 2 years ago, after being on public assistance 21 years ago, 2 years ago I took my company public, and I'm one of two African-American women to be the founder of a publicly held company, and I'm the only person in the self-development industry to have a publicly held company. And so many people kept saying, you got to tell the journey. And I said, there are so many things I learned that shifted the trajectory of my life. There are so many things I learned. And my students are constantly stepping onto my virtual university campus and asking me, teach me what you learned. So Abundance Now was about sharing what was my mindset shift, what were the best practices that I picked up from some very, very brilliant people who were loving and giving enough to share with me what they knew and help cut a learning curve off of me and help save me time, money, and stress. I wanted to share that.
That's wonderful. So people can get the book, Abundance Now by Lisa Nichols. And we have run out of time for today. I want to thank Lisa Nichols of Motivating the Masses, and also thank our audience for joining today's teleclass. The class will be available as a podcast on your conference website. If you register through Eventbrite, you will receive an email telling you when the podcast is available. Thank you so much for joining us.